the Wuhan fever, or rather the Shanghai Shuffle sniffles.
Yeah, man, ooh, you're not allowed to call it that. Not allowed to call it that. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other, like Spanish flu. I don't know. Spanish flu actually originated in China, so that's a misnomer, according to my research. And then there's the there's Lyme disease, which, you know, that's not fair to people in Lyme, Connecticut.
That's right. Or Lyme's, for that matter.
Yeah, or just Lyme's, but it's with a Y, so they get a little bit of a break. I don't know. What else? What other diseases are there that are from a region that we can think of? Montezuma's revenge is not fair to Montezuma.
What about Deli Belly?
That's funny.
What else is there? Are there any others named for regions that we, you know?
The plague is named for all of Italy.
The plague. No, I'm trying to think. Bubonic. What's bubonic mean? Is that like from a? Is that a region? Where's bubon?
I think that's just that's what they refer to as your lymph nodes, right?
Your bubons.
I think they're called bubons. Yeah. I think I got some bubonic plague going. Let's see here.
Diseases named for regions. I mean, most people that like researchers that discover diseases want their name to be attached to it. Like, you know. Try to think of one. Like,
I'm pretty sure Corona wants nothing whatsoever to do with the virus here.
Yeah. Oh, dude, no way, man. You know how much they're getting out of this, man? I guarantee you all these chumps are buying more Corona beers.
I don't think that's the fact. I think Corona stock went down, like, hard.
Nah, no way.
I think it got hurt early on, but I think it's not. So, oh, here you go.
Back up now?
Oh, here's one. West Nile. So that's not fair. That was discovered in 1937, and we called it the West Nile virus ever since. The guinea worm, so that's not fair to West Africans.
I thought you were going to say that's not fair to Italians.
Very, very not fair.
What about the swine flu? Pigs had nothing whatsoever to do with that.
They didn't?
Yeah.
I thought that was the pigs in Mexico one. No,
swine flu. No, had nothing whatsoever to do with the pig.
Was it birds?
Fortunately, the pigs got a bad rep. Yeah, it was carried by the birds.
Yeah, it was a form of avian flu, wasn't it?
That's okay, right.
So Rocky Mountain spotted fever is not fair to Jeff.
It's probably fair, Clint. Let's be fair. Let's be honest.
So like none of these diseases.
I'm patient fair. Yarrow. Remember, I'm probably the progenitor of a lot of this going on.
You might be. I that's why I'm glad you're.
Like, dude, all these Wuhan people were flying around into Vietnam in like November, December, and then bam, Yarrow's in America.
Yeah, you know what's
that's a good point.
You know what the craziest one is? That we have one that's active right now in the Middle East. That's literally called Middle East Respiratory Syndrome.
Yeah, that's camel disease.
That's camel disease, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. That doesn't... I mean, the camel flu is like the... it's kind of like the... What's the... I don't know.
The SARS? SARS of the Middle East?
It's like the vernacular you use, just like kind of like casual vernacular, but the actual, I guess, official terminology for it is Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which is kind of like saying... It's kind of like saying... the China virus, right? It's like the same thing. It's like it came from a region in China, and this one came from a Middle Eastern region, which, if anything, would also be discriminatory against people from like Arabs, like people from the Middle East, if that's what you're going to call it. Like I'm just really interested in the psychology behind the media calling it the Wuhan virus and calling it the China virus for like 2 weeks, and then Trump said it, and let's be honest, he said it as a to be insulting. He was trying to be provocative because he's pissed off at China for hiding it for
But he's like best friends with the Chinese leader, man. They're like hanging out all the time. They're best friends. They're BFFs.
Yeah, just like he is with Putin. And he says he says once it's called the China virus. It came from China, you know, whatever. And that's racist and xenophobic, but it wasn't it's not ever been racist or xenophobic before to call. Like, no one's ever said, oh, the Spanish influenza is a race. Well, maybe somebody did. It's a racist name, right? Nobody ever – I don't remember hearing the media all up in arms about, like, we should call it something different. What it – guys?
I don't think it's racist at all.
Can you explain this new thing? Is this just another, like, looking for any possible way to frame Trump in what they want Trump to be?
Yeah, I don't know, but I can tell you this much. I wish Clint was fired up on whiskey right now, because this conversation would get a lot more entertaining, it sounds like.
A little raunchier.
Well, no, I mean, it is true, Clint, but isn't this always been the same thing, right? Like, when has this stopped? Like, he was elected, and now it's just, like, anything that happens.
It's anything. I mean, like, it is maybe partly his fault, because he's doing it provocatively against China, because, if you listen to the presser, he was basically saying, they were blaming it on some Chinese officials, were blaming it on American military releasing it so they could, boost their propaganda. So he was saying, no, if they're going to do that, then we're going to call it China virus. So he's doing it provocatively. Okay. Where does the media get off then deciding to say, well, more examples of Trump being xenophobic and racist, even though we've been saying that for the last 2 weeks, we've been calling it the Wuhan virus. Like, what's
a double standard?
What world are we living in now where this is like the norm? It's so insane and so ridiculous. Like, I don't get it. It's driving me nuts. And also, another thing that I'm railing against right now that is pissing me off, because I've been following this hydroxychloroquine thing with azithromycin as a possible cure. Well, I was watching the presser on that, where he said, hey, we got some very promising signs coming with this drug from a French study. It looks really, we might be able to, we're going to try to FDA fast track it and see what we can do. And everybody's just piling on like, you idiot, you don't even have a peer-reviewed study. You don't even have any kind of the proper epidemiological, all this nonsense. Like, if your grandma was 82 and otherwise, had some underlying health, maybe she has diabetes or something, but she was otherwise pretty healthy, and now she's in the hospital about to die from the fucking coronavirus, and you're talking about, well, you're junk science, when some very reputable sources are saying that it works.
So what's this? Because I thought there's like another one that came out that I think it's like a malaria drug.
Yeah, remdesivir.
They're using it in Japan.
Yeah. That.
I don't know. But how would azithromycin work? Isn't that a antibiotic?
Yeah, that's the thing that's kind of strange about all of this.
Right.
Z-Pak, bro. You pop those things after you've been out with the ladies.
I have a theory.
It cures the pneumonia part of it all, because that's bacterial. Based off of the bacteria.
Ah, right. But, yeah. So basically, what you're saying is like it will cure like the most extreme effects of it, right? So yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell you how many people were piling on, going, azithromycin's antibacterial. It doesn't even work on viruses. It's like, that's not what the French study said. The French study said we don't really understand why this combination works, but we do know that it works. And our theory is probably that, like what Adam said, that there are some bacterial infections that sort of spin off from this that infect other areas.
Because they snowballed the whole thing.
Yeah. And it causes your body to shut down. And this kind of prevents that. Like, it's not rocket science that we're dealing with here. What we are showing, this stuff is working for these kind of SARS viruses. And Trump says something hopeful about this is very exciting and promising, and hopefully it works. And then like two idiots in Nigeria overdosed on it, and everyone's blaming Trump for and that's the other thing. I saw this, the media had like articles saying 2 grams of hydroxychloroquine will kill you. And it's like, yeah, same with every other prescription drug, you freaking morons. Like, that's not an argument at all. Every other prescription drug in a dose of 2 grams will probably kill you, you idiots.
If you got to take it, take it. I see this as a way of cleansing things from idiots. Like, come on now. Like, if you don't know that, what?
I know, but the media is using it. They're using this as an argument for, Trump being anti-science and irresponsible, when it's like, we've gotten to the point now, okay? I've said this 1,000 times in this podcast, and I know you guys are not like big rah-rah Trump guys. You guys are not like in his camp. But we've gotten to the point now where the president can literally not say anything without the media spinning it to be like, you're evil. you're doing this and you're evil.
No, at I least. Agree with you 100%. I think that the media is on like this vicious attack. Which is crazy, because if you think about it, every other country on the planet, well, maybe just thinking of Europe, the European media automatically went into like defense mode. Like, we gotta help the country, we gotta unify everybody, we gotta talk about all the positive things that are happening. For example, in Germany or Italy or Poland, all the news media there is trying to spin all of this in the positive light, you know, all the good things that are happening. Meanwhile, here in the States, they're still in this, like, you know, battle, fight and be biased, you know, split up the population sort of a mentality, because that's what brought them clicks in the past. But now it's just pissing people off. Now people are seeing, like, man, Trump's just been battered for like 4 years. 4 years he's been shit on. 4 years they've attacked him. So when Peter Alexander asked them, you know, how what do you say to all those people that are scared? But before he even asked that, he like you know, quoted all the death rates and all that stuff. He wasn't given the president an opportunity to calm people's nerves. He was, you know, provoking him into being, you know, into more or less being like, oh, you're doing a shitty job, so what do you have to say about that to the American people? So, you know, this whole drug thing, this whole COVID, or calling it a China virus, this whole thing of exploding on a journalist, it's all bullshit. It's all the media trying to spin back into this past narrative of how horrible Trump has been. In my personal opinion, I think he's done a great job with you know, handling this thing. No other president besides FDR has ever handled anything like this. So, like, relax.
No, man, I'm just I am just absolutely I'm just frustrated to the point of no tomorrow by it's what seems like a blindly driven agenda that even in this time, and I know all the like noise aside about Trump being an abrasive figure and attacking the media, like, he's been doing it for the past 4 years, and it's like, you know, that's his style. Now, can you at least try to be adults and like report, even if Orange Man Bad is like saying, you know, railing against you?
Yeah.
Can you at least make an effort to try to show some objectivity? And that, you know, when you watch the press conference, and I recommend that everybody listening watches it, because I think it's an interesting study in like what the way that we're viewing something. So you see Trump say, there's a very promising thing. And this, by the way, this is what Elon Musk tweeted out. So it's not like he just found this on like a InfoWars website. Elon Musk tweeted it out, and some researchers that, you know, did this study, I guess, in France are very reputable. So it's not garbage science, but it does need to be studied. Maybe we don't have time to study it the way the FDA wants to study it typically, because it takes, you know, months for there to be like a really controlled study to be done. But just watching Trump say that, and talk about how this is very promising, we're excited about it, which should give hope. And then seeing the doctor get up, and the doctor said, well, he was very doctorly. I think his name's Fauci.
Yes.
And he said, yeah, well, this is something, you know, hopefully it works. But as a doctor, you know, I'm kind of, my number one thing is to make sure that it's works in a clinical trial stage first before we release it to market, and I'd want to see the science behind that first. The anecdotal evidence is great, we love that, but hopefully it works, we don't know. That's all he said. And then the entire media piled on and said, doctor contradicts Trump immediately. And it's like, that's not even close to what happened. Like, am I going crazy here? Like, that is not even what happened in that interview, in that press conference at all. And they just spun
it. You know, the media don't, you know, expect you not to have watched it. That's why they're saying all that.
Well, this is just what happens in a world of clickbait. I mean, they're just saying that shit because they know a bunch of assholes that on both sides of the party be like, fuck yeah, I want to see how Trump got dominated. Or on the other hand, like, what the hell did you say about Trump now? It's like, dude, this is like the best revenue fucking generating scheme for both sides of the aisle ever. Like, everybody should give Trump a high five. He is so polarizing.
He's literally making their careers.
Like, oh, dude, he's 4 years, millions of dollars on this shit.
He's their bread and butter. That's all he is.
Oh, 100%. Well, that's the thing. I mean, dude, I mean, in two cents, too, it's almost as though, like, okay, not to go too far on a tangent, but it's almost as though, like, this is why the Democrats are so staunchly behind that fucking mumble box Joe Biden, because they know, like, hey, man,
he's disappeared now. Nobody knows where he is. 3 days
now. Let the party roll, right? Like, we're going to keep acting as though Trump is the boogeyman, right? Evil Mr. Mm-hmm. Orange Man. He's, like, crusading through, Sleepy Hollow or whatever. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to get so much more revenue streams out of just writing clickbait garbage, because that's basically what journalism is today, right? Like, they probably all use data miner, and it's like this instantaneously, like, fast, rapid reporting that they just need to know things immediately. And it's all nonsense, you know? And it's like, to say otherwise, and this is what Clint's saying, it's like, well, I mean, more or less, he's just saying, well, fuck it, you know, desperate times, desperate measures. I guess we've all forgot that old adage, right? But what are you going to fucking do, right? It is destroying the economy. For the large part, it's destroying the economy for the people that are the most marginalized, better yet, right? Like,
dude, this is going to be worse than the Great Depression. Like, well, it's already 3 million people are trying to get unemployment.
Well, here's the thing. I was like, dude, nobody's going to fucking – dude, that bill to give struggling Americans, like, $1,200 or $1,500 or whatever it is, like, that is not going to get passed. Like, just, I mean, everybody talks about it. Fuck no. You know, it's like there's no immediacy in this, right? Like, people's bills are due Tuesday, right? And they're like sitting there like Steve Mnuchin and the rest of these guys are fucking around with like how much more to bail the banks. And it's like, dude,
yeah,
you know, the people that are freaking out about their stocks, right? Like, those are the guys that probably aren't worried about fucking rent.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true too.
And it's a crime on so many levels, right? That, like, these really, really important issues aren't the ones that people are actually targeting.
Yeah, dude, but we gotta help out the banks, man, and the airlines. Man. We gotta help them out. We just threw $1.5 trillion at the banks, but you know they need more.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I'm actually okay with bailing out the airlines as long as, and I think that this was maybe mentioned.
I got a billion flyer miles out of it.
Administration. No, their CEOs, their executives have to agree to capped executive pay for indefinitely. And I mean, because here's the thing. We can't have the airlines collapse and then you got to rebuild them from scratch. I mean, maybe people would say that's good, but that takes a long time to rebuild an industry and to rebuild these giants. And I think that if you got thousands of people relying on a job through it and you let them collapse, then those people suffer too. So every single person that works for American, United, Southwest, all these airlines that are going to, you know, go belly up if we don't do something.
Dude, just fucking nationalize, like centralize a fucking centralize an airport industry. Like, basically, all right, fine. Yeah, Air Force. Hey, guys, look, you motherfuckers are going to basically like go out of here 4 years. All right. Like, for another 2 years, if you want, you can be a fucking pilot for Air Force Inc. or whatever you want to call it. And all those shit airlines that go belly up because of fucking terrible business practices since the 1970s, they can just fuck off, you know? Anybody else is trying – I mean, yeah, Clint, you're right. You can't let it go to shit. But, dude, this whole thing, we're literally pumping and dumping just like hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah, and nothing changes. That's the thing.
Yeah, nothing fucking changes. And they'll say, yeah, these huge things, don't do it. But it's like, fuck that. Like, that's not severe enough to make sure, like, this type of shit doesn't happen anymore, in my personal opinion.
Think about it. All these airlines are asking for $50 billion. Meanwhile, when they were flying high and mighty, they were, you know, putting up surcharges for just having an extra piece of baggage. And that was, like, $200.
That's true.
So, like, where did all that money go? It just disappeared into the pockets of
CEOs. To their CEOs. Yeah, they were making $15 million on average. I mean, like, $15 million was the high side. Let's say $10 to $15 million for their CEOs, which is ludicrous when you're charging. Yeah,
but Clint, also, like, what's, like, the golden parachute and, like, everything else that these motherfuckers walk away with at the end of the day through, you know, and, you know, all these other, you know, sort of incentives that all these guys earn? I mean, fuck, man. Like, it's not severe enough. And it's, like, certain things, it comes to this kind of conclusion in life where it's, like, okay, yeah, complete socialism sucks dick. You know, communism is terrible. I can tell you guys straight up right now. Adam grew up in it as well. Like, it's a fucking terrible situation. But, you know, certain industries, man, like, you know, fucking healthcare for one. I mean, if you think about how much people are just getting bilked left, right, and center for fucking fake diagnoses constantly, or not to mention now that we see here with, like, the fucking university scandals, we see the issues of the banking sectors. Now we're seeing the shit go fucking awry with the goddamn airplanes. You know, it's like, fuck, man.
I just find it hilarious how before there was no money for anything, nothing could have been done, and then this whole thing happens, and then everything's found. There's money to do everything. There's time. There's corporations are jumping in to help out. Like, where was all of this prior to this whole fucking pandemic? Like, where was
all? I can tell you where it is. It was being hoarded by corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans who don't want to see that money ever go out unless it's to save for social programs for these big, massive firms so that all their buddies and insiders can make out like bandits. That's what it is.
That's why it's time to change that. It's like, this has shown us two things. One, we cannot rely on international manufacturing. Like, all the plants in China, that shit needs to come back here. Like, you have to start relying on everything that's in your country. And two, it just shows you that the level of corruption that needs to be completely wiped out, or at least exterminated it partially. Because, you know, this shit is insane. It's proved.
Let me ask you a question on that. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is more likely to root out that kind of corruption and that kind of sinister business practices? Donald Trump or the Democratic National Committee?
For sure, Donald. I mean, exactly. If I have to pick between the two, yeah.
Yeah, because Donald Trump is not, like, he's not an ally of these big globalized corporations that love.
Well, he even said neoliberal. He doesn't believe in buyouts.
He's not a neoliberal, and he's not
he's not a globalist. He's definitely not a liberal.
Thing. Yeah, he's not a globalist. That's the key thing.
You think he's a neoliberal?
For sure. I mean, like, neoliberal practices, depending however you want to define them. I mean, he is. I mean, think of it this way. Like, complex interdependence theory and neoliberalism in and of itself is Trump Tower. I mean, like, almost to the T.
He might benefit from neoliberals, but I don't think his policies he's been implementing, like with the protectionism and these things, where those are not neoliberal at all. Like,
this is an interesting thing about Trump, and I think that we've brought this to light in several conversations. You know, in and of a fact, like, if you look at his track record, he's actually much more, I would say, socialist than, say, probably what Hillary Clinton would have been, what Joe Biden's track record states. And it's pretty fucking interesting that he's one trying to actually, in a way, in the wrong way, because he doesn't really understand things. Like, another thing Clint brought up in a few episodes ago, like, going clean, right? Going nuclear is probably like the best way forward. So rather than fucking around with like coal, whatever, maybe Trump just can't grasp the fucking reality and he's too old and he thinks about Hiroshima.
Dude, it's clean coal.
Or whatever. But like, he does make this effort to sort of like make it so we have a better, stronger sort of low skilled labor force, which is, you know, one of the large debates I think we're all facing. This is sort of the issue of automation that people bring up from time and time again. But it he's doing more than fucking, I mean, think about it. Clinton, when they were creating all these maquiladoras, you know, right across the border, you know, these guys were elected Democrats. I mean, I would say the worst thing about the DNC and the worst thing about the Democratic Party in the United States today is that it's coming out true as a day is long that they are hypocrites, you know, as all, like, you know, they are hypocritical about everything, you know. And it's like, even to the extent like Bernie Sanders is, I mean, all these people are basically A, victims, and then B, they're motivated to use whatever sort of story they're trying to tell to personally profit off of that. I mean, that is like the story of Marxism through and through, right? It's like some guy comes up with a revolutionary idea, ergo, I'm going to run as a social democrat, ergo, this will give me a lot of sort of support, baseline, whatever, with the end game understanding of like, you're all fucked, but I'll become a millionaire out of this. And you see these same things going on now with sort of like what Trump is doing. It's like, well, can you take the man and say, dissect the idea that, yes, he's a billionaire, surely, that's fine. But is it possible for a second to remove that fact and look at his policies, his actions, aside from the personality, and be like, holy shit, in fact, these are actually pretty, you would say, in a lot of ways, liberal and democratically associated. But I don't know. You know, again, everything.
No, it's everything you just said is 100% correct. I mean, the man was a Democrat. He voted Democrat in the 1990s and in the early 2000s. Like, come on now. Like, you know that whatever Trump is, he's his own beast. He's not left. He's not right. He's just, he knows how to manipulate.
Whatever he feels.
Exactly. And so, the Democrats, what they're really good at is emotional manipulation. They manipulate the public through, through the cages, through through the concentration camp prisons on the south border, through, you know, climate change and all that nonsense. And they're using emotion. They're not using reason. They're not thinking like, oh, open borders, that would be bad news. They're like, oh no, it's like human suffering. So it's just, you know, they've been doing that for, you know, 20, 30 years now. And they,
well, I'd say, yeah, too, on this thing with China, uh-huh, you know, and Adam, you just brought this up, and I think this is really interesting, right? So, like, you know, TPP was canceled because it was a shitty deal, and, like, most people that know anything about, say, like, the Asian Development Bank or, like, the other sort of infrastructure and investment banks that go on here in Asia, mm-hmm, they're very much sort of, like, associated to the extent to sort of, like, position China to be the strong man, right? Like, that's always the case, right? And that's typically why, if you look at the ASEAN Association, you know, the United States just is like, you know, it tries to bring allies out, like Taiwan and Australia and all these people. But it's always sort of like a positioning game, so on and so forth. But with this TPP, it's like, well, we have to really sort of ask ourselves, you know, to what extent do we want to sacrifice not only our economy to this idea of, you know, outsourcing, right? But also, mm-hmm, sort of like the health and well-being of our citizens, because this is proving to be a case, right? What do we actually know, and how can we actually prevent infectious diseases when different societies have different standards and different things may be admitted through different forms of, you know, transnationalism and, you know, just imports and exports, et cetera? Like, is are open borders and is free trade something that should be, you know, championed so highly? And again, it's like, I don't really see the benefits of a lot of this stuff ever hit the pocket of Joe Schmo, but what it does is it kind of creates this opiate, so now you can go buy a fucking iPhone, right? When you probably, yeah, wouldn't be able to afford it otherwise in your, you know, your dirtbag salary.
Yeah, but I mean, but that's the only benefit the problem? You get. Isn't that buy the problem? That, no, number one, they're selling this as if they're given, the government's giving you money, while they're actually just returning your taxes to you. And then two, they're not looking at the psychological aspect of people are going to get money, and, you know, at least, you know, 30% of these people are going to spend it on trash, and, as opposed to like paying their rent or figuring out their you know, food problem or whatever.
Well, yeah, it's going to get dumped straight into the economy by people buying trash. I mean, it's going to go probably like 80% to liquor, you know, and then the rest is probably going to go to the, like, and then think about like the informal economy. How many dudes are going to go out and like buy a blowjob, and then like somebody's going to go out and buy some fucking, you know, fentanyl or whatever with it. Like,
yeah,
you have to be a working adult in order to receive this check, but whatever the hell that means. And then it's like, again, like, you know, this is the American problem is, By and large, nobody
throwing money at it, man. They're just throwing money at the problem. They're not looking at the structural changes that need to happen.
No, but even more importantly, nobody even knows where their fucking tax dollars go. Like, it's such extreme cost associated with all this shit. Like, yeah, you're talking about $1 trillion, right? It's like, all right, well, whatever. We have like 300 million people. Of that, there's probably like 175 to 200 million that are actually working, right? Like, because you have to factor in children, adults, and then people that are just utter decrepit morons. So how do you pay? I mean, like, whatever, like, rack up the fucking debt ceiling, who gives a shit? I mean, that's why Jimmy Dore was kind of wrong with that, because clearly, like, that's where the money is going to be taken from, right?
Oh yeah. You know, I think the best way to handle this is to just, like, you know, face up to China and be like, listen, you guys are gonna forget our debt, and you're gonna do it fucking quick, because all of this shit that you just cost.
Look, man, these charm offenses are bullshit. Like, China sending these fucking masks, and China sending these healthcare workers, and China sending these experts. No, man. Fuck you. You guys did this. Whether it was a complete accident or not, I don't give a shit. But literally, this has destroyed the fucking economy. And you know what? This isn't going to be over when there's zero patients, which isn't going to fucking happen, because you guys are dancing with the devil in terms of proportionality, right? Like, oh, hey, San Francisco and everybody else. Well, guess what? Like I told you, Adam. Well, you know what? Denver's still running a fucking muck. So when some shithead from DIA gets on a flight to San Fran to go like see his boyfriend or whatever the fuck he's doing, this dude is going to probably fucking bring corona, and then the clock winds back and it starts all over again.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. And the thing is, like, I wouldn't have had a problem with China if, like, okay, it happens. Like, you know, you can't control diseases. But the big thing is they're pulling, like, a Chernobyl out of this. Oh, no, nothing's going on here. Exactly. No, you know, nobody's dying. We haven't had human-to-human transmissions. No. Oh, we're at zero transmissions now. Nothing happened. And then it all comes out like, oh, no, those numbers aren't real. They suppressed data in December.
Yeah, but
they were killing people.
The biggest crime in all of this, though, is that when they knew about this back in, I think, I'm not sure what date, but in November, like the Chinese authorities were aware of this in November, and yeah. they allowed something like, from the time they knew about it, when they were silencing the doctors who were trying to tell them this was a way worse than anything Wait, they've seen before.
Reiterate that. Proactively silencing the doctors.
Yeah.
They knew right. about this.
No, that's what I mean. They were yeah. silencing the doctors. They exactly. actually, the guy that was on the forefront of that ended up dying from the freaking disease, but they tried to silence them, and then...
Dying from the disease, dude. Okay, he okay. died like 2 days after he's like he yeah, came out.
Yeah, I would say dying something.
He was Epstein.
Oh, he was right. Epstein for sure.
Right, so... And in that time, when they were trying to cover it up instead of taking proactive measures to quarantine, 5 million people fled from Wuhan. And this oh, is yeah. the result.
Dude, that was like one of the biggest yeah, migrations within
Vietnam,
the country.
Probably, too.
Right. So who's going to pay for that? Because we know that happened. That's not any like speculation. That happened. Like they were the doctors were trying to voice their concerns. We have record of it. And the Chinese authorities try to silence it, sweep it under the rug, and act like everything's okay. 5 million people left Wuhan for all different parts of the country and flew out to different parts of the world. Now we have this. So who's going to pay for that? Like, I mean, what's going to be the punishment? Is it just going to be like, no, we love – like business is so good that we're just going to like just keep our mouths shut and let them do it again? Like what's going to happen? They didn't ever shut down any –
Yeah, dude, go ahead.
If anything shows anything, Hillary Clinton automatically, after Trump called it a Chinese virus, said that China shouldn't be punished for all this, blah, 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 and then Big we surprise. Shouldn't be using racist rhetoric. Yeah, so what's going to happen Adam, is Adam, all Adam. These globalists are going to try to defend China while the rest of the world is going to be like, no, it's time to fucking put the, you know, be fucking have some balls about this.
What did Hillary Clinton's mentor write? Mr. Henry Kissinger.
Oh, I didn't. What did he write? I didn't
China.
Read it.
Dude, these guys are all fucking Chinese. Like, they're all globalists. And the thing of it is, too, it's like, God, now I sound like such a ranting, raving fucking crazy dude. Like,
but it's true.
But it's just true shit. Like, and then the other thing of it is, it's like, look, I say fuck it. Like, the only way you can screw them over is like, all right, any good coming out of China or Vietnam or, you know, whatever they try to manipulate their factories, 150% tariff for fucking the foreseeable future. And you know mm-hmm. what? That's going to kill businesses. But somebody's got to figure out a way for this shit to be fucking sorted. And this is, like I said, man, like the end of the Chinese era is coming much faster than the end of the American era. And, like, of course, like, was it, like, the Financial Times the other day sends out this report saying, like, oh, is this repositioning global authority?
What? No. It's actually like, strengthening it.
I mean, look, dude, this is a problem with the Chinese state. It's, like, they do a bunch of nefarious shit constantly. And this one is it's fucking things up left, right, and center. And you know what? Like, if the authorities of the United States, right, or, say, those that exist in that are hanging out in Davos on a regular basis, which probably is going to be fucked, right? Because a bunch of Europeans are hyper-humanitarians and nobody wants to point a finger and, you know, everything's just. It's sort of like, you know, appeasement with Neville Chamberlain, right? And they're just going to let them run wild while
but
they
you
destroy,
know what? Now,
rape
now, now with the return of borders to Europe, at least the Eastern European countries have had the backbone to be like, fuck no,
all
we're not taking anybody
yeah,
in.
They need – the Schengen zone needs to be broken up again and all the European states need their own borders back. I'm sorry. There's a reason why
too.
We have borders. This is the reason why we have borders. We have borders for a freaking reason. This is why. Because what happens in freaking Slovakia if we have borders might not spread so fast to France or vice versa. Like, that's why we have borders. It's not – nation states are a good idea. They're actually a good idea.
Well, and even more know, so if you think – well, you know what the funny thing is, too, is that, you know, Europe had all this huge problem with the refugees, and then this happened, and then bam, all the borders are closed, no refugees coming in. Like, how is that not possible just, like, you know, 2 months ago?
We're so compassionate and loving. We'll take anyone, the sick, the needy, the weary, and then all of a sudden the sick want to come in and infect all your people, and all of a sudden you see what's really at stake.
Yeah.
Well, I do think it's interesting, too, because, like, honestly, if, you know, again, like, if Schengen existed or didn't exist, right, say, for instance, like, they, you know, basically the Italian government and the state is basically an economic cesspool, and they can't do anything but provide tourism. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's what they rely upon, right? Like, they're not a highly educated or industrious or, you know, service-based economy. So what do they rely upon? They rely upon the fucking shitty canals of Venice. And what do? They offer a ton of visas to people all over the world. And then somebody's like, oh, hey, fuck it. I'll take a train up to Germany for the weekend. Because you know what? There's no borders. And this is what happens. And, you know, it's like, oh, everybody would say, oh, you're so
xenophobic or
populist or whatever. But it's like, no, this, like, man, infectious diseases also don't discriminate, you know, like, but they can be halted to a certain extent. And I think, like, this was, needs to be taken into consideration. And again, when we start talking about issues of, say, highly unmonitored states, ergo Mexico, right? That's also bordered by highly unmonitored states, all of Central America. We need to be pretty vigilant with kind of being like, well, maybe we should have a little bit better protection at the border. Just saying, you know, like,
oh, if this doesn't highlight the need for strong border security for a country, so we can actually know what's coming in and what the, you know, what possible, like, invisible threats are. Like, I'm sorry, but you can't have an open, porous border, and then think that when there is an outbreak that you're going to be safe. If anything is done, driven. And I don't know what Trump's motivations are, so I won't get into that. But, like, if anything has bolstered the argument for strong border security, this is the thing that'll do it.
I mean, who cares about drugs and weapons, man? These, like, again, Clint, like you said last week, we got all of them goddamn AR-15s in the world. You can't shoot a goddamn virus, you know? So it's like,
yeah, good luck with that. You know, I know people are hoarding. They're running to the gun store to buy, you know, ammunition and guns and stuff. And that's great, you know, so you can protect your family from.
You got to protect your toilet paper, bro. People are stealing that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, the zombie apocalypse is coming, but you're not stopping it. I mean, I guess you can quarantine in your house for only so long, but
and shoot yourself in the head.
Yeah, I'm just right. Yeah, or that. But I mean, my whole thing with this disease is what I said last time, and I haven't really changed my opinion. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I don't know if. I mean, maybe social distancing can kind of be like casually implemented. Like, hey, if you can't avoid certain, you know, crowded areas, like the kids going to nightclubs and stuff, maybe try to social distance and that'll help flatten the curve. Like maybe the virus will peter out a little bit faster. If we do that, that's fine. Let's do that. But let's not crash the world global economy, and let's keep all the people who are have underlying health conditions and people that are over, you know, 60 years of age that you know are at risk, that have a higher percentage of potential fatality risk. Let's keep them quarantined and let the rest of the freaking, like, healthy population get on with it. Like, there's not a single case of a kid 9 or under that's even that had any issues at all with this, as far as I know.
That's exactly the thing. But that's even more importantly too. It's like, well, like, do you contribute to the economic well-being of society? Like, all right, yeah, you're employed, you have a family to take care of, all these things. Okay, Clint, how old are you? Oh, I'm 42 years old or whatever. It's like, okay, like, well, how's your health? Are you a smoker? No, non-smoker. Okay, do you have any immunodeficiencies? Nah, I'll be like, all right, man, you got like a 99% chance of survival. You might have, like, you know, be bedridden for a couple days, worst case scenario, but chances are you'll be all right. All right, go to work. You know, let's answer these surveys. But, like, if you don't have an economic impact on the well-being of the economy and you're, like, 70 plus, you know, or, like, just have the unfortunate reality that you're immunocompromised, then just, like, that's it. Like, you are sectioned. You cannot leave your house.
You're quarantined. And, yeah. How about this? If you're 75 and you smoked for 30 years, you don't anymore, but you smoked for 30 years, you've got diabetes and heart disease, how about we put you in a plastic bubble and then, you know, slide food, you know, through some sort of IV system to you to keep you alive for until this thing passes. So we keep, well, this, you know, but let's put all our money in that. Let's put all our money in effective quarantine measures to protect the weak and the frail.
Yeah,
and,
but who's going to make money from that, Clint? People got to make money. The gun manufacturers are making bank right now. Well, everyone's trying to buy a pistol for
Zoom
what?
Zoom must be making bank now too, man. All the work's migrated under there. Shit.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah,
I understand that people are gonna, like, there's gonna, if we did that, and, you know, people
it's
are
already
still
too late
it,
for that.
And they're
people
gonna
are
die.
Already way too panicky. You know, here in Illinois, the governor asked for anyone that's in the medical field that's retired to come back in, and they'll reinstate their medical license, you know, for free.
But again,
pharmacists don't have to, you know, extend their license. The state's going to cover that. Where was that
this?
Before?
Can doctors even – here, it's exposing a lot of bullcrap red tape too. How about this? Can doctors even – if you're a doctor in Indiana, you're not allowed to go to Michigan and treat somebody. How stupid is that? Yeah. Like, that's the dumbest red tape bullshit I've ever heard in my life. It's like kind of like the insurance companies not being allowed to practice across state lines.
Dude, that's so like academia. Oh, you have a degree from Europe. Oh, I don't know if you can teach here. Oh, you got a degree from somewhere else. I don't know if you can use that.
Oh, you got your teaching license in California. I don't think you can teach in Indiana. How about no? How about, like, let's get rid of that nonsense? Like, I'm sorry. I'm sick of it. Like, all this bullshit red tape needs to be dismantled immediately. Like, I mean, even for me, like, I'm trying to sell a product up in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and these code officers up there and the lawyers for their states won't let, even though our product is used in every other single freaking state to treat people like on a normal basis, they're saying, no, we're going to treat your product as the same as an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and therefore it doesn't meet our code requirements. Like, you guys are such idiots. Like seriously. Like,
there's no need for those people. That's the thing. Those are non-essential, like, administrative garbage jobs.
Yeah, they're getting paid to shut down industry. That's what they're getting paid to stop the market.
Well, guys, this is why HR in and of itself is such like a big industry now. Like, dude, the entire American economy, right, is substantiated upon garbage, you know, inconsequential bullshit jobs. So being like,
hell yeah.
Oh, I'm a fucking recruiter. What the fuck does that mean?
You read my resume? What does that mean? So you just talk to people and say, like, oh, you should have a job.
Why is there a step between, like, an interview and like some other bro or chick that's like, oh, well, I see that up.
Yeah, why is there a middleman to get a job?
Like, what the fuck is that? Well, let me highlight it. So we had at our school, the school that I worked at, we had a, whatever the, what are they called? The board, the school board or whatever we have. I mean, it's a private school, but so they're all mostly volunteers or they actually pay money to be on the board, whatever. But
I'm on the board, Clint. I'm on the board. Tell your kids.
Yeah, there's a bunch of parents that have a lot of money that mostly sit on the board or alumni who have a lot of money that sit on the board. They're lawyers. And when we needed to go out and find a new head of school, they hire a consulting firm to do that. I think the consulting firm costs like $150,000 to go out and search for a new head of school. Then we find this young guy from Notre Dame who doesn't really have any experience as a head of school. And because of the connections and I don't know what other political reasons because I wasn't in the room, I don't know what conversations went down. They paid $150,000 to bring in all these candidates for the search. And then at the end of the day went with the guy that was local that wasn't even found by the agency. So I mean,
that's ridiculous.
It's so wasteful.
Much money that was just wasted.
Meanwhile, teachers are making like a pittance of money and working their butts off, like trying to, you know, always try to keep activities for on-house, you know, in like on-campus students and, you know, like running to taking bus rides to, you know, on weekends to go to entertain them and go to Walmart and go to play, you know, keep them, you know, entertained and active. And you've got like them just pissing money away on their little executive, you know, it's almost like they're just doing it to make themselves feel important. And they're like, meanwhile, you got families that are trying to, you know, pay bills and pay down student loan debt and stuff that are working for you tirelessly. And you're just throwing money out the window like that. It just drives me insane. Like these people are like so out of touch with reality about the real working people. And then they get up and they
like, think about it. These are the same people who argue with somebody at a shop about, you know, double bagging items. And now all of a sudden these assholes are posting all this shit on Facebook about, oh, we need to respect our clerks at the store. We need to respect our gas station attendants and our waitresses. Yeah, they're people. You should have done that way before this happened, you asshole. Like, come on now.
Yeah, I think they have a psychology where they look at – this is how bad they are in my opinion. They look at, well, we got to find a good head of school. It's another executive position, and executive positions require investment. And therefore, we got to put a lot of – well, we'll put a little bit of money because $150,000 to $200,000 is not very much money at all, you know, to look for a head of school. Meanwhile, they don't even have any idea that the freaking biology teacher is only making $30,000 a year and has three kids.
Yeah, that's assholes. Ridiculous.
Assholes.
Well, I think the worst thing on earth are wealthy Democrats.
It's just because they're both rich and like, we need to help people out. But
Nancy Pelosi wanted
embody they embody hypocrisy to the furthest extent. And it's like
public enemy number one.
Here I am. I make $150 million, whatever it is, like her husband did, right, out of basically like chinky fucking real estate deals, just like Trump. Like, her existence is nothing more than a less successful version of Donald Trump. Let's not mistake ourselves about that, right? Like, her husband's very successful. This was the same. This is just like the same guy, Donald Sterling, I believe was his name, who was the owner of the LA Clippers. Like, Trump and Sterling and other guys, like Nancy Pelosi's husbands, were nothing more, Jared Kushner included, are nothing more than slumlords. And, you know, they paint these different pictures about I'm representative of X and they're representative of Y. But at the end of the day, they're the same fucking cut of the same fucking cloth. But the only fundamental difference is that one guy at the end of the day is saying, hey, man, fuck it. Let's cut taxes for the super wealthy, while she's sitting there saying, I'm here fighting for the fucking poor minority that just walked across the border.
I'll be right back.
And they're all fucking full of shit, you know? But it's like, goddamn, like Dante's Inferno, right? The eighth circle of hell or whatever. I believe that's the deepest circle. Is representative and it is reserved for hypocrites. And that's where all these motherfuckers should go if we believed anything religious, man.
To some degree, we're all hypocrites, but there's a real nefarious hypocrisy.
Yeah, man. Clint. Like, don't even
saying that
ever.
You're for the working man.
Oh.
No, I'm just saying when you say that you're an advocate of the working man and that you're trying to help lift people up, and meanwhile you have a mansion in Martha's Vineyard and you're talking about how you want to help the little man. Like, get out of here, man. You don't know. You're not able to actually understand. Here's where I knew. This is where I mean, I think I mentioned this before, but when I and I'm not trying to say that I'm like some sort of like whatever oracle or something that I can see. Oh, I'm very, very smart. But I had a very good feeling, and I said this to my brother in the debate back in 2016, leading up to the election, when Trump and Hillary were having a debate, and Trump said, you know, Hillary was they were getting into it, sparring, and Hillary said something to Trump like, hey, you're hiding a lot of your money to avoid paying taxes. You know, what do you want to tell the American people about how the money that you're hiding to avoid paying taxes? And he goes, yeah, because I'm smart. Okay. And the sort of that moment to me showed that Trump, even though Trump is a rich kind of, he's a rich, like jerk, like kind of, you know, arrogant rich guy. Yeah. I still think he has an understanding of what the little man wants to hear. That's what the little man wants to hear, because they look at the government as sort of like this. The government's never done anything for us. The government's never helped us, and they want to take our money. Well, what's that all about? That's not cool. So Trump says, yeah, I'm smart. I figured out how not to pay taxes because that's what I did. It was very honest. He said it. And it makes Hillary look like kind of like she doesn't understand the real concerns of, because the little man doesn't see taxes converting into any kind of help. Well, they just don't see it.
And I think, Clint, like, that's a very good point to raise now about Corona. It's like, dude, there is zero social safety net in the United States, you know, and we're not going to name the name, but like, you know, there was kind of a misappropriated understanding of what that is. But to a certain extent, like, there isn't a safety net. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you work at 7-Eleven right now, or like, well, better scenario. You work at AMC 24, local movie theater, and say, you know, you're not 18 years old, you're not a high school job, but you're like, dude, you know, you've been there 5 years, you know, basically you didn't go to college. Like, that's just kind of what you're doing. You're basically unemployed now, and you don't, like, yeah, you can file for unemployment insurance, which probably is going to take you a month to recoup, even at the rate that you're going to get it, which is going to be much less than you're actually paid. And what do you do? You know, and then again, it's like, why the fuck am I paying taxes? Like, all these guys probably think to themselves, like, the Social Security is going to be bullshit. Or say, worst case scenario is you went to get, like, a degree in, like, community college or, like, the local state school in, like, you know, art design or whatever. You racked up a considerable amount of debt, and now you're, like, literally sitting there looking at a check for, like, $27,000 a year, and now you just lost your job, and you have zero safety net. You know, that's a fucking problem. You know, we're fucking, you know, I'm gonna be here pounding my table, but the United States is the wealthiest goddamn country on earth, and you can't help out these people. It's just, it's abhorrent. It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's awful.
Are we at the point, and this is like for, you know, me, you, and Adam, for the most part, are pretty much like, you know, liberal free market, you know, type guys. But 100%. Just like Milton Friedman, you know, argued several years back, are we ready to implement UBI? Like, is it time for UBI to be a part of our system, like, at least for, you know, a large part of the population that needs it? I mean, because, like, I know Milton Friedman argued for it. Andrew Yang was very compelling in his argument for it. I heard the guy that wrote The Bell Curve, Charles Murray, I heard him arguing for it, even though everyone says he's a racist because of The Bell Curve. I heard him on Sam Harris's podcast, and he was talking about, and he seemed like a very reasonable thinker. I don't know much about The Bell Curve, but I heard him talking in a very compelling way for why.
You're dancing with the devil right now. Most people, if you start to say Charles Murray is a rational or a reasonable person, I'm not saying otherwise. I'm just saying he is. Any listeners who doesn't know who Charles Murray is, wrote a book that basically analyzed the IQs of different ethnicities in the United States, and his findings. You can look into this yourself. We shouldn't have this on the podcast because it's not our foray. Yeah, but
he's extremely divisive.
He's extremely divisive. So if you want to look at that up, then this is why I'm saying Clint. Yeah. I agree, but you know that's why people would probably say.
No. Yeah. I don't know much about it. I just know that he had some like he had some this book that was massively controversial back in the was it 90s?
1980s, late 80s, I think early 90s. Adam, I don't
late
know.
Late 80s, yeah, what's and it just that? Like. It sort of shook academia, and people were just outraged that he would do this study because his findings showed that some races have a higher IQ than others. I think it's a pretty silly premise, but what it ultimately, if you look at it, what it, I mean, not because I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but ultimately what it did was show that Asians have the highest IQ, you know, for like ethnicities, but. Long story short, I was just saying that I heard him on Sam Harris's podcast because Sam Harris wanted to talk to him, and I like Sam Harris's podcast. By the way, probably biggest anti-Trumper there is, Sam Harris. But I was listening to his podcast, and Charles Murray was making a very compelling argument for universal basic income, and was, you know, reiterating that, you know, Milton Friedman was a big advocate of it, and I think Andrew Yang did a great job of sort of explaining why it might be something we want.
Also, importantly, Milton Friedman obviously is like the grandfather of free market capitalism in the United States, right? I mean, he's kind of the founding father of the Chicago School of Economics. So it's
totally anti-welfare. Yeah.
Right. Well, he's like Keynes can like, you know, he can see the door kind of guy. You know, he's completely.
Yeah, he's a Hayek guy. He's right, a Hayek guy. He's an Austrian.
He's a completely Austrian-Hungarian or Austrian economist, Austro-economist, whatever you want to call it. The Austrian School of Economics is, you know, the one that's more laissez-faire, liberal, free market-oriented economy. And he is probably was the strongest proponent of this form of governance relating to the markets. And it's interesting that, yes, this is why it's interesting that Clint's pointing this out, that he was in fact much in support of UBI.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, Clint, like, here's the deal. It's like, right now, they're having these fucking debates, you know? It's like, no, like, again, like, bills are due Tuesday, right? Like, I don't, like, Steve Mnuchin, like, you're good. You know, whatever you're trying to figure out with, like, Wall Street and us, all this, like, you're good. Figure that fucking out later. These guys
that's,
are
that's
okay.
Shit that doesn't matter right now.
Well, they're going to see next week, you know what I mean? Like, dude, you want to see people get desperate? This is where you start teetering on the edge of like mass hysteria and crazy shit happening in the country, where you have basically, I think I was watching something earlier today that said like 50% of Americans, once you hit the threshold of going over $400 of what their average monthly budget is, they're like reaching fucking like destitution. That's half of America. And you're fucking around with $1,000. Like, dude, this shit needs to happen tomorrow. You know? Mm. People are going...
Yeah, I mean, people are already looting stores in California.
Bro, dude, I'm fucking not kidding, man. And that's what's an always a consistent air mark of looting? First thing, curfew. First thing, shutting the city down. Okay, now you got desperate motherfuckers knowing like there's nobody out. Fucking what's step three? People robbing stores, you know? I mean, it's almost like they're rewriting the shit. It's like nobody even actually responds or think. Like, I guess nobody watched, like,
Mad Max
or something. You know? Like, Oh, it's just, it's wild. It is very wild.
But while they're arguing over all of this, I still find it hilarious and kind of fucking disgusting that all these senators were dumping stocks like 2 days after their secret meeting with the intelligence community.
Man, they're all in on it, dude. Like, so many people walked away with so much cash, either A, shorting, or B, getting the skinny on like what pharmaceutical company is going to pump out the next potential vaccine for it or whatever. Like, there's some people that made some serious money.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people that made serious money. But the funny thing is also, because I got to bring this up, is
probably crypto-style money.
When they were making the test first available, the insurance would charge you like $3,000 for to get tested. And now this Texas company said they're going to release a test for $150 that you could buy in your store. So
how about this?
Hey, how about this? Make it free.
A guy built, like, apparently, and there's an article, you can look it up. I heard this on a podcast, not sure which one, but a guy built an MRI machine, like, I guess one you can make at home.
Yes.
And, he made it at home, but he made it for like, where he could resell it for like $100 or something super cheap. And he couldn't get through the red tape to release it because the manufacturers of these big MRI machines that cost $1 million have their claws too deep in the bureaucracy and the politics. He was shut out. He couldn't get it passed.
Well, that's literally bullshit, could not, man. That's shutting down the market.
That's criminal. Absolutely criminal behavior.
It's like the story of like guys getting fucked around that created cars that ran on water.
The hydrogen car?
But dude, it's the same as the electric car.
No, there were cars that ran on water, man. Like, dude, I mean, the thing of it is, it's like if you fuck around with big money, big governance, like, they will find a way to make sure that you are shut the fuck down tomorrow. I mean, everybody knows, like, for one example, the war on drugs, the long-standing debate about marijuana, it's not about fucking the well-being of society.
Oh, it's only about, why not, man?
Fucking making money out of it, man.
That's right. It's all about the Benjamins.
Yeah, I mean, cocaine, the U.S. government probably sits there on a daily basis, and they're probably like, why can't we just like fucking legalize cocaine? And they're like, you gotta kind of go like take over a country to get all those plants. Like, oh, fuck. All right, we won't do that.
Well, I guess we'll do that in 20 years when everything's calmed down.
So what's the answer, guys? What do you guys foresee? What's gonna happen?
Man, I don't know. I think what is great about this thing, and if you want to look at any silver lining, is that the exponential growth in our technological response to the next one is caught us so off guard. I mean, it shouldn't have caught us off guard because we should have been ready, but nobody wanted to spend billions trying to solve a problem that really wasn't actually affecting us, when we have other issues at stake. But now, because of this, just our rapid response in terms of creating a vaccine, our rapid response in finding out which medicines work, our rapid response in figuring out what kind of social norms need to take place to isolate the virus, all this stuff is like a great trial run in terms of trying to stop the, let's say, in the future, there's a virus that's, 30% lethal. I mean, because this could happen. And this is going to be, in the end, this might save future generations from all the hell and heartache of having to go through it with a way more deadly virus strain that could come out of one of these freaking wet markets. So I think this inevitably is shining a lot of light on all the weaknesses in our system.
Yeah, but hold on real quick. Isn't the wet market theory being debunked, kind of?
Yeah, I don't think it came from a wet market.
Yeah,
I think there's a whole bunch of information coming out that it's like literally impossible for this thing to spread that way.
I don't know. I just heard that it was likely from one of these really unhygienic wet markets where they're selling bats and pangolins and all kinds of
things. No, it's been 100. So like the furthest extent of understanding.
Yeah, that's getting debunked.
It's been debunked. And I think it's kind of interesting. It's like, all right, these conspiracy theories again. Like, well, what the fuck? Was this supposed to be weaponized? It's like, it's not that deadly. But it's like, what's the aims of it? Like, here's the question to me. If the big question was, all right, looming disaster, right? Trump is going to go in January to make these deals with China, right? And continue down this path of basically saying, we're going to tariff the shit out of you. Your whole entire, the CCP or whatever, is completely dependent upon whether or not your economy hits certain rates, which since 2016 has gone from basically like 11% on an annual basis rate down to like 6%, which is a huge dip for developing nations.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, is it something more or less like there could be so, like again like deep state conspiracy theories? To me, it just seems like there was so much at stake. Like, why not release a pandemic? Not a pandemic in the sense like where it's really rapidly killing a lot of people, but like,
okay, but hold on,
but enough answer, to like scare the fuck out of people.
So answer the question: if it didn't come from a wet market, what's the theory?
Oh, I think it was a biological weapon that was leaked by the Chinese state.
Yeah, it's more and more coming out that all of this was leaked either accidentally or purposefully from a lab.
Biological fucking manufacturing comes out of Wuhan, like globally. That's where antibodies, that's where bioreagents, that's where all this shit is. That's where it's all fucking studied, researched, manufactured. Like, it's a huge hub for basically like bio research, right?
Yeah, it's one of the top four best, I guess, bio research labs in the world.
So
I don't know. I'm not gonna say it. More and more information is showing that.
Like all those doctors that quote unquote got it and then disappeared, they all worked at that lab.
Yeah, not only that, man. I think like just like China is like Russia light, you know? Like it doesn't really put bullets in the back of people's heads as much, you know, like in front of the Kremlin.
But it just sends you to a camp.
Yeah, you just kind of disappear, you know, you fall off the face of the planet, you know, I mean, there's a reason why China is in such good, you know, good relationships with, like, the south of Sudan and fucking North Korea.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of understandings, like, politically, you don't really fuck with the Chinese state. You know, I talked to a lot of guys here that worked in China for decades, and they're like, yeah, like, you kind of follow rules, you don't really do a lot of stuff, because you go against the state, you know, again, it's not as aggressive as, like, sort of things that take place in Russia, but it is very secretive. It's very controlling. You know, obviously, authoritarian, communist state, one-party state. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, for instance, it's not Russia. Like Putin again just rewrote the constitution. So he's basically going to be in power until he's like 97.
Oh yeah, he's just going to be in power until
he dies. Xi Jinping also rewrote the constitution, stating that.
Whoa! Like, that's not his real name. Term. Call him what he really is, Winnie the Pooh. Call him Winnie.
So Winnie the Pooh, he rewrote the constitution to basically state he can be in power forever. Now, to ask yourself again, like this is what the thing is, like to ask yourself whether extremely dire situations don't go for just extreme fucking situations, right? Like, I wouldn't put it past the United States government doing shit like this either. Like, there are people out there with a fuck ton of stake, like trillions of dollars, global governance, all sorts of weird things that they're invested in and involved in, that have the authority and capabilities of basically transforming society as we know it. To say like it's an impossibility and this comes from a pangolin fucking scale. Yeah, maybe. I don't know, man. I don't hang out in bat caves, you know.
I don't know, Batman, man. Occam's razor tells me pangolins and fucking bats didn't create this.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, I don't know.
I'm reading Live Science like right now. It's saying that it didn't. They can't trace it back to the seafood market that they thought that it was supposed to be traced back to.
Yeah, but all this information is coming from the Chinese government. They're going to blame fucking pigeons for it or chickens or something like that.
Well, okay, we don't know. But this is the thing. We don't know where it came from. So, like, we just know that it didn't come from a specific seafood market that they had a hunch that it came from. But it looks like it definitely, like, it jumped from some kind of animal. Like, they've. Like the scientists in the West that have looked at this have pretty much definitively said this cannot be it wasn't created by humans. It was created. This is a virus that started in an animal, most likely, and then jumped to humans.
No, so, that's what I mean. Like it was in an animal. It was mutated via mutagens and then placed inside a human embryo. And then it developed into what it is now.
Evolved in an animal and then jump to humans. But you're saying that it was nefariously put inside of a human for testing and then it escaped?
No. I'm saying that from what it looks and from what I read, is that this was part of an animal, of course. Yeah, you all of these diseases come from animals. But the testing that was done on it was, they engineered it, its biology, so that people could be, could get it. Like this.
So
is
you're saying they weaponized it?
Well, they were trying to weaponize it. That's the thing. They were trying to, and it just got out. Yeah. Hmm. All of this is in response to what was going on in Hong Kong, and they just wanted to shut it down.
why do they not know that releasing that is going to come back and get them too? Like, you can't release a global pandemic without it killing your own people. How stupid is that?
That's my theory. Is like, if your back is against the wall to the extent to which things are going with sort of, you know, global diplomacy and the issues of China. Like, look, man, like, basically everybody's calling a spade now. Like, every, like, fuck, man, the global community is in support of Hong Kong. There's other debates and understandings about what's going to take place now with Taiwan, right? Like, is it going to be recognized by the United Nations Security Council? These types of things are being debated now. Is the American sort of backing for a lot of the institutions that is built concerning manufacturing going to start pulling out and say, like, we're going to either A, start creating a shit ton of tariffs, or B, bringing these things back to the United States? Like,
yes, China was shoved and shoved and shoved, and eventually got, you know, put against the wall. It didn't know what to do.
It has a lot of issues going against it. So now it's like they have time. They can bide their time. I mean, this whole thing is going to take – basically 2020 is over. Like, this is going to take, you know, at least until June in the United States to kind of come to terms whether or not kids are going to go back to school, whether or not you're going to go back to your normal lives, all that kind
of
shit.
This changes the course of history as we know it. Like, everything is going to change now. And, like, Clint said that, you know, the silver lining out of this, I'm being a devil's advocate here when I say what I'm about to say. But the silver lining is that, you know, we'll be ready for this in the future, blah, blah, blah. The technological response was really good. But I also see this as a way to manipulate public and control mass number of people. To me, this is like, oh, this, you know, this is a test run for how to keep society in order whenever we need to do whatever we need to do from a government's perspective.
Hold on. Here's one thing, too, that's interesting. So the New York Times released an article just the other day that says Chinese authorities are now spinning a tale that the U.S. Army started the coronavirus epidemic.
Yeah.
No, but that's what Trump said. So Trump essentially said it's the China virus. And then the reporter said, oh, why are you calling it the China virus? Like, that's not very fair to people from China. And he says, because it originated in China. And then she said, well, don't you think that's kind of racist? And then he said, no, I'm calling it the China virus because the Chinese are saying that it was started by the U.S. military. And that's not right. And so if they're going to call it the U.S. military did it, I'm going to start calling it the China virus.
Yeah, but it's the American virus. But again, explain that. It's interesting because what they're saying, right, their claim, the argument is like, again, like, they're denying the fact of whether or not this emanated from a wet market. Okay, I don't think it did. Maybe it did, whatever. Like, I'm not a fucking biologist. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not studying what was going on with fucking corona, right? Like, where there's no experts on this show, guys, FYI. But
true.
There is – look, man, China, again, actively, this is what happens with their state media, is publishing a new theory that this was originated in as much as U.S. state military introduced it into Wuhan in October. Now, that means however they went going about that, whether or not that means people were infected or whatever, right, through different forms like Adam was discussing and going to Wuhan and proactively being engaged in these communities, or whether or not somebody got it at a wet market, or whether or not, you know, China themselves were introducing it into the market to try to destabilize things, to kind of protect their interests because of how things are taking place now between Hong Kong, U.S. trade wars. Again, now I feel like we're hanging out with Alex Jones, but I do think...
They were talking conspiracies. Conspiracies are part of the backbone of what's actually happening here. So
Let me make a prediction. I think we're going to be out of the woods before May 1st. That's my number one prediction. We'll be good. We'll be back, getting back to normal. And here's why I say that. Because I think even if the virus isn't under complete control by that point, people are just not going to stand for it anymore. We're just going to go back to work. We're just going to go back and start doing stuff. Like, people are not going to be penned up like, you know, pigs in a freaking cage for very long. So if it's not controlled, I would say even sooner than that, probably I would even say maybe mid-April, but I definitely, in my opinion, by May 1st, this will all be behind us, and whether it's solved or not, people are going to go back out and start living normal life, and then, you know, if people get infected, we're just going to let the chips fall, and we'll get back to normal, and the economy will start churning again, and we'll be back up and running. That's my prediction for the outcome of this. May 1st is the absolute furthest this is going to go, and because I think the technology is going to get there. But in addition to that, I think this is not any kind of, I mean, my opinion, you said Occam's razor. In my opinion, this didn't come from some biology lab. I think it was just bad animal practices and bad interactions with animals, whether it be a pangolin or whatever else it is. and it jumped to a human, and the Chinese have been warned about this repeatedly, and they still didn't do anything, and it jumped out, and then they tried to suppress it. That's what I think. That's my guess. I'm not saying that's what happened.
But here's an interesting thing then. So, like, why – then how do Iranians have it? I thought Iran was, like, a closed state.
Yeah, Iran was number two in cases. They had, like, 20,000 cases within,
like, so does that mean, like, the Chinese, like, helping them develop their, like, nuclear capabilities, or what's the deal?
Again, high population of smokers, lots of underlying diseases.
No, but how did they get the disease?
Yeah, because remember, at the time it was happening, only China and Iran had it. And then they jumped to Italy.
So,
yeah.
But how did Iran get it?
Because 5 million people from Wuhan left Wuhan and then went to other places around the globe, including Tehran.
I thought Iran was a closed republic. So that means
no.
You could still travel there. Yeah.
Chinese are doing business there like crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. No, the Chinese are doing business there like crazy, and if you got like just one Chinese businessman goes to Tehran, boom, there goes the bomb.
So that's funny though, because again, like I said, did in effect a lot Vietnam. Like I said, I was talking to Adam, I think before the whole thing started, somebody, like the disinformation machine is super strong in this part of the world. Like I said, Vietnam, Clinton, you said MSNBC, but the disinformation web, the strongest ones are China, North Korea, Vietnam, Russia. Like, I wonder how many people were infected with corona here in Vietnam, and then maybe how many people perished, if it's that deadly. Because, there's a lot of smokers here, but I don't know. Vietnamese, like, they definitely don't have diabetes because they all weigh, 48 kilos. But
I wonder if it has anything to do with the climate there. Like they apparently, like, real. I mean, I know that this – I just read something that said that the virus does spread in hot, humid climates, but it doesn't stay on surfaces as long. Like, the sunlight just disintegrates it faster. So maybe it has something to do with the climate there. What's the temperature there right now, Jeff?
It was like 33 degrees Celsius every day. But yeah, supposedly the disease dies at 26. So it's like
in the humidity too. It doesn't like humidity. It doesn't spread very fast in humidity. So
this is like 95 degrees here on average every day right now. And then it's only going to get hotter as we get closer to the summer months. So
I think that's got a lot to do with it.
Well, okay, then let me ask you this. Like, where else? I mean, what about like Mexico or South America somewhere, Central America?
Doesn't seem like they're getting the same rapid epidemic type spread that we are.
I don't know. Brazil's in the thousands now for how many.
Yeah, but they're probably pretty cold right now, though, aren't they? It gets cold there, right? Somewhat.
And then Ecuador and Argentina are slowly climbing up.
You'd have to look at like what areas and
like Chile is at 537 since last week.
I mean, like, I think there's a reason why there's a higher rate of infection in Ho Chi Minh City, or no, in Hanoi versus Ho Chi Minh City. It's like basically in Hanoi, it's early spring, kind of like it gets kind of chilly at night. And then down here, it's just basically you live on the equator.
I think it's also the availability of tests. Like, if you look at the map, I sent you guys a map
of everything.
How many
people are reporting this shit?
All of Africa, it's like, there's nothing there. Like, I wonder why. Exactly. Because there's still like civil wars in the Sudan happening. And,
so how do you explain this stat? So like the Czechs got it. So my wife is Czech, but like the Czechs, they had skiers in Italy in that area, and then they came back with it and they infected the Czech population. Czechs had something like, last time I checked, and I know this number is probably higher now, but they had like something like 880 cases in Czech Republic.
Yeah,
and it's
1,047 though.
They had zero deaths at the time. Zero. How do you explain that?
Closing off the border real fast and jumping on this right away. That's like Poland.
Yeah.
Poland had close to 500 cases, but the moment this thing jumped, the moment the Ukrainians started burning down buses with the Chinese, they closed down all the borders and stopped all the flights from China, Iran, and everywhere else. It's just fast response time. That's why if you look at the map, you have Germany that's just booming with it, France and Italy and Spain, all countries that didn't shut down their border until it was necessary to do. They didn't. It wasn't like a preemptive shutdown. It was like, oh shit, our hospitals aren't going to be able to handle this. I guess we need to shut this shit down now. So
yeah.
The way I look at it is like all these countries that are dealing with it, they're able to you know more or less just deal with it, preemptively lock down everything. They were ready for it. Meanwhile, the countries that aren't, you know, they're having problems with it, just kind of did a day to day, and it didn't work out.
Well, I think that hydrochloroquine and azithromycin is going to be a game changer. That's what the you know, president said, and that's what I think these French scientists have said, that mm-hmm. it's completely effective, and even so far in that the anecdotal studies they showed. So they tested on 39, something like 39 people in China. They did like a little study. All 39 recovered like way quicker than the normal population. And not only did they recover, they had no trace of the virus left inside them. Which means not only did it get rid of the virus, it cured them completely of the virus, which is unheard of. It only happens in, I think there's only one other virus that's ever been like outright cured.
100%. Is that possible though? I feel like that's impossible, because the moment you get the flu, you have the flu for life. You just have, you know, right. When you get the flu again, you have a variant of it.
I don't know what other virus. There's only one other virus in human history. I think that it's one of the, what's it called? Hepatitis. One of the hepatitises can be cured. It's the only one in human history that's ever been found.
Huh.
And they actually think that this, whatever it is, hydroxychloroquine might have be the other key that unlocks this coronavirus and actually wipes it out completely instead of leaving a trace.
If this is all true and they're able to find these fucking, you know, vaccines and cures for these diseases that literally popped up like last week or, you know, a couple months ago, where is all this like money for cancer going? Like, why isn't that cured?
The second the second AIDS patient ever was just cured actually last week.
Yeah, from bone marrow. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that why?
I think so. I mean, yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, obviously didn't make the headlines for some reason.
That's awesome.
Wait, I got a question though, real quick, guys. Why does India only have 341 cases?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. Because
it's just shit reporting, you know.
I'm looking at it now, and it says more than 1 billion Indians are in lockdown. This happened 12 minutes ago. I guess all of India's in lockdown. So that tells me
they were all partying their asses off at like that killer fest this last weekend.
Dude, that country's about to see some fucking spikes in deaths.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Goddamn, Italy has 553. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, Italy is hyper-dependent upon tourism. So is Vietnam. Vietnam has 99 cases. Italy has 53,000. Come on, guys. Let's tell the truth.
The West is actually reporting the numbers while everyone else is like, oh, yeah, there's no problem here.
Everything's happening. Come see our country. It's beautiful.
You know, the thing that's like crazy is look at Russia, 306. Like, come on now.
That's 367.
That's Putin suppression.
There's no way like Moscow's not like just filled with
all right, but. But hold on, there's another theory here based on what I just mentioned about Czech Republic and about Slovakia had the same thing where they had a lot of infections but no deaths.
Uh-huh.
Could there be some sort of genetic marker here that makes some ethnicities more – and here we go back to Charles Murray – but could some ethnicities be more hit by this?
It's sickle cell.
Oh, it's what's that? The Tuscarani experiment? What was that called?
The Tuskegee syphilis experiment?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is this something similar?
What I'm saying is that it might very well be that, you know, Slavic people have some kind of like something in their DNA or something in their biology that makes them less. Like it doesn't hit them as hard, whereas maybe certain Asians can be really hard hit, and maybe Persians are really hard hit by it, and maybe Northern Italians are really hard hit by it. Like it looks like this might be going after, you know.
Are you saying this is a Polish virus? The Poles released this to make sure the Slavs conquer the world.
Well, that's
Slavs don't appear to be hit that hard by it.
You know, that's a good point. I'm looking at all of this. Ukraine 47, Belarus is, you know. But like Lithuania 105, Latvia 139.
Slavs are big smokers. Why are they not getting hit as hard? I don't get it, man.
Dude, Slovakia 178, Hungary 131. Dude, the Slavs are keeping this shit down.
Well, and no deaths.
Yeah.
Like
Croatia 253, dude. Yeah. Well, here's the, if you look guys, at the map, how, like Eastern Europe is all caught like light blue, while Western Europe is like.
Well, my only question is, how are there 2,234 cases in Norway, and only 367 in Russia? I call bullshit. 100%. You know any Chinese, all those motherfuckers are going over there all the time when all the
Yeah, but started. You know what? The Russians are always disinfecting with vodka. They're always drunk, man.
That's Slovaks then, right? Like we got Poles, Lithuanians, Czechs.
Maybe it's the amount of drinking these countries do, huh?
Maybe Czechs drink a lot, most per capita. Hey, I would say that maybe Russia. First of all, I don't believe that the Russian media is going to report it because of fear from Putin backlash. But I also think that Russia's a very big country. People can really spread out. Yeah. You know, really get away.
Mongolia at a whopping 10, and of course North Korea with 0. Of course.
North Korea. It made everybody more healthy, is what it did. They became all Olympic athletes, everybody. Oh, God.
Yeah. Everyone's a Superman now there.
On that note, gentlemen, I got to get going here because I've got to go protect my kids from the coronavirus. So,
stay healthy out there, Clint.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to. So if you guys want to continue, you may. Because I think you wanted to talk about the book. I don't know if you guys are going to do that. But
yeah, up to you. Yara, what do you want to do?
Yeah, we can do it. I mean, we haven't talked. I mean, it's been 2 weeks, so we can jump into the tomb for like 5-10 minutes and wrap.
Yeah, that works. We could, cool. Tomb's all about death. We're experiencing a global pandemic. Might as well.
Okay, I will sign off. Adam, remember that my thing paused for a second there, so make sure you find that marker and
we'll do.
I'll send it over.
All right.
All right, everybody have a go. Until next time from the bunker. Bye.
Peace. Awesome, Luigo. All right, Adam. So jump into this guy here. So this is a bit of a piece we read. Say. I don't know.
This is a while back. I think we read this like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
A piece by a certain fella, very, very morbid man, H.P. Lovecraft. I'm sure most people are aware who he is. Guy grew up in New England, had a pretty shitty life, kind of became very poor, then moved to New York, where he became super racist. Hated all immigrants, hated all blacks, and it kind of shows in all his stories where most of his villains are either immigrants or people who don't speak English very well or, something to that extent. But he's mostly known for his crazy, weird fiction, his, twisted way of looking at things. And the story we read was The Tomb. The story was his very first story ever written. It was written in 1917. And he dedicated it to, obviously, Edgar Allan Poe, who he thought was, the guy. He noted that the inspiration for the tale was a walk through a Providence cemetery where he saw an old tombstone dating back to 1711, which is the date that he used in the story. And he wondered, why could I not talk with him, the fellow who was buried, and enter more intimately into the life of my chosen age? With that, he wrote the story, which is pretty much about a fella who sees a tomb or when he's walking through a cemetery, and he's very drawn to the tomb. It's a family tomb of some guy. I can't remember the name of the family, and he feels that he should be buried in there. And then later on, we learn that a family way back when all died in a fire. Except for one gentleman whose body was like never found, and he feels that he's the reborn version of the person in the mansion that survived but was never found, and he goes to the tomb and starts sleeping by it. People in the town, obviously are freaked out by why he's sleeping over there, and then he tells his parents that he has dreams. But he feels that they're real, that he's sleeping in the coffin and in the tomb and, in the catacombs below it. But he can't know for sure because there's a lock on the tomb. So he has all these visions of, these, I guess, spirits and family members from way back when telling him that he needs to come back, he needs to rest with them, blah, blah, blah. And he's committed. His parents commit him. They think he's crazy. So he asks one of his servants if he can do him a favor before he cuts off all this stuff off and it becomes committed, to go and check in the tomb if there's an empty coffin down there with the name of either Jarvis or something like that. So the servant goes down there and he does find an empty coffin with a specific name that that the narrator told him. And it's kind of, you know, the major twist is that he is the reborn version of the guy, and he's just trying to go and die in the tomb below. So that's it for the story. If you have anything else to add there, Yaro, jump on in.
No, I mean, like, I think it's the reason why I really like the story so much. It was a little bit difficult. You know, he's kind of a very verbose sort of Joseph Conrad kind of writer. You know, you can tell he really likes to you know, pepper his writings with.
He makes you feel stupid when you're reading it. Like, man, this is English.
Yeah, he's very complex. You know, and I think that's probably why it's a tribute. Well, Poe is actually pretty straightforward, but I don't know. Yeah. It was great. But the one thing I really enjoyed about it was sort of like a esoteric, you know, quasi like Halloween esque version of like A.A. Milne's, you know, Winnie the Pooh. obviously, it doesn't have character complexity or like differentiation between each. But like, you know, when you can really involve yourself and you think back to like sort of walking through deep, thick forests and like being young and being inquisitive about this idea of like, what is a tomb? What does a tomb represent? What is a spirit? How do I, you know, connect with sort of this understanding that, you know, it's sort of like an early understanding of existentialism in a way. Now, I found to be extremely sort of, I don't know, it's something great to like sit back on a couch when you're sitting there reading it and think about it, just like reflecting on it yourself as a young man, if you ever spent times, you know, dicking around outdoors or, you know, kind of playing around in the woods, which seems to be sort of a theme for all three of us. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of one of those stories. It was like to build a fire, you know, like it brings a lot of those like sentimental feelings of isolation and being inquisitive into sort of different facets of, you know, exploration, and, you know, sort of like the penultimate sort of understanding of death and life. And it's great. It's a little difficult, you know, reading wise. Again, H.P. Lovecraft, weird guy, weird kind of writer. Again, like kind of the same reason why I don't really like Joseph Conrad's work.
Yeah, Joseph Conrad puts way too many difficult words that you're like, wait, this is English?
I thought. Well, wait. So what is he doing? So is Lovecraft? Is he an immigrant or is he born in the
States? No. He was born in America. He thought that he was nobility from England.
Right. So, yeah, that's a story about him. Yeah, he thought he was nobility, right?
So he thought he's better than everybody else, but it turned out that he died in poverty, unknown. He wanted most of his work to be thrown out or burnt. And then one of his friends took all his work and published it, you know, outside of the magazines where H.P. Lovecraft got a couple articles, you know, here and there.
What was his most famous story?
Oh, it's a novella at the Mountains of Madness, which I highly recommend. It's written in like a normal, non-H.P. Lovecraft sort of way, easier to digest, and it is phenomenal. I highly recommend that read.
Right on. Well, hey, guys, if you're interested in taking a walk in the woods and beforehand you want to get all fucked in the head, sit down and read some of The Tomb. It's great stuff.
It would also make you reflect on you know, your ancestors and where you came from. Or, you know, can you talk to your ancestors? Like, what's left of the people who you're more or less the you know, who were your progenitors? Like, you know, where are they now? They're dead. But do you know anything about them? It's to me, like, at the end of the story, I thought, like, man, I need to probably research about my great-grandfathers or great-great-great-grandfathers and, you know, where they came from.
Yeah, so is there something innate in you that you take from previous generations, or is that just a fanciful way of believing in, you know, posterity that we're all afraid of because at the end of the day, you know, Corona's out there.
You know, with regards to that, because that's interesting what you just said there. Yesterday when I walked my dog, there was a whole bunch of people running. Like, they didn't go to the gym because the gym's closed. And it was kind of nice to see all these people out in the streets, obviously social distancing. But I saw a dad teaching his kid how to ride a bike. And it reminded me sort of like, man, this is kind of unreal and surreal. Like, all these people aren't in front of the TV. They're not stressing about work right now. Or, you know, maybe not stressing about, like, doing the work. And it was kind of, in a way, beautiful to see that, you know, people are kind of living again as opposed to being attached to the telephone, to these social constraints. So,
well, being attached to the office,
silver lining to that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Attached to the office. Yeah. That's.
If there's a really good point to show is that what Corona does is to show like Bartleby's theory of the meeting, right? Which is that.
What's that theory? I don't know it.
It's 80% of all meetings are 80%. Or what is it? It's, yeah. All meetings are pointless for 80% of the people attending them, right?
Uh-huh. And it's I know what you're talking about.
80-20 theory. But it's like, what happens the majority of the time that people spend socializing? Like, so often you'll see during the day people just like having meetings or fucking around, and then it's quote unquote working or being in these office spaces where they cultivate themselves and they kind of, you know, there's two sides of it. I believe to a large extent people like to complain about work, but I think to a lot of ways people see it as a way to like get out of the house and socialize and have a community, because like that's what human beings do. On the other hand, it's sort of like, especially when people start to complain about shit, it's like, look, man, there's no fucking point to going to these meetings. So I think like when we're out of there and people realize like, man, like I work remote now, but I feel so much more productive. And it's like, yeah, because you're just not sitting there talking bullshit all fucking day with Steve or Mary. And, you know, or like, you
got your boss Mary's coming pretty to see cool, you. Man. Mary's pretty cool. Don't hate on Mary.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just think the majority of time, here's the deal. Like, what was it? Charles Bukowski said, is one of these quotes I read today. It was like, people get up in arms about like pointless things, but you'll never see anybody, you'll never see anybody going crazy about the fact they're wasting their entire lives. Something along that line.
Hell yeah.
And it's like, that's knows. The thing. It's just the thing. It's like trivial shit. People go fucking ape shit over. Like, this coronavirus is kind of one of them. And then nobody fucking gives a fuck about, you know, so many different issues that affect our lives on a much larger scale that probably, like, if you were actually think about it, have a much, much, much more, say, hefty effect on your life than
I agree 100%.
And all this other shit.
I feel like this whole pandemic showed us all the bullshit that's actually part of Western living. One of which I just like to highlight is homelessness. In California, there's 110,000 homeless people, and nobody gave a fuck about them until this whole thing hit, and then all of a sudden, all these Beverly Hills individuals are like, oh well, we need to get the homeless people off the streets. We don't want them spreading the disease. Well, man, and it kind of just shows you like, all of a sudden you're able to give them housing and provide camps and warm water and everything, huh? Interesting.
Well, it's not mutually exclusive to the developed world. I mean, here as well, it's like, dude, like the world is melting, right? Like, literally, Ho Chi Minh City, Bangkok, Jakarta, they're all going to be under the fucking water in no time. And not to mention the fucking cancer rates that are about to take place because of pollution, and you motherfuckers are running around freaking about COVID. Like, dude, if you die from COVID, you're fucking lucky. You know, like, either way, if you grow up in this part of the world, right, and you spend another 50 years here, you're going to die holding your chest because guaranteed you're going to get lung cancer.
That's called a silent scary killer. Shit, man. You're going outside and you're just dying. Remember in Krakow, we would go outside. Or is it the same in Vietnam? You just start coughing and you have
it's
10
times
stuff.
Worse, bro. Like, if you look at AQI, it makes Krakow look like fucking child's play.
You gotta get out of there, Yaro. You gotta get out of there before you get some of that.
I'm dying at like 37 in a hail gunfire in Colombia. Tommy, if you're listening, you already know the fucking manuscript gets thrown at your feet, and that's just the tale of Jeff, man. Like, hey guys, audience, look out for it. Lackluster coming your way, probably 2025. Yeah. Greatest book ever written. But no, for real, man. Like, I think it's like the important things don't fucking matter. And here you go. You have like the syndication mechanism taking place. And, you know, everybody's freaking out about this. And it's like, well, what's the real issue? I mean, at the end of the day, what we've come to find out, just like we came to find out with flu, with the cold, with any sort of just like traditional seasonal malady, like, it fucking kills old people.
Yep.
All right. Nice story. Like, sweet. Like, so tell me this, like, aren't fucking old people already taking precautions? Oh no, I got my flu vaccine. That's the only reason why I'm protected against the flu, not the fact that I should be hiding inside because there's fucking flu variants. Dude,
we talked about this before, but the whole idea of the flu vaccine is so bullshit. It's like there's 20% chance that you're going to get that specific strain of flu. It's like, what about the other 80%? I could still die from the other 80% of the flus out there.
What do you mean 80%? Like other fucking 1 millionth fucking derivative of whatever the fucking flu was released upon society. But here's the deal. Back to the tomb, just to like wrap this up. I think here's what the fundamental issue is, right? Like whenever you see a complex issue being fucking turned into this syndicated echo chamber of nonsense, become a child again and think about what impressed upon you and what curiosity drove. And when you ask yourself this question, hey, can I talk to my ancestors? Is there something I can think about, like, you know, teasing this idea out? Well, ask yourself that same fucking question. Is this important? Are they right? Do they fucking actually know what they're saying? Because you know what? They fucking don't. And don't let it fucking dictate and destroy and just literally, like, it's fucking up the world right now. And I just think it's insane. Become a child. Again,
hell yeah, I agree with questions. That 100%. Read fairy tales. Fairy tales, fables, and get yourself some grim fairy tales nowadays. Get yourself Aesop's Fables. Read that shit, because there's more truth in that than anything that you're seeing on TV nowadays.
Well, that's why my siblings say, like, you know, Jeff, having kids is a great thing, because maybe that's what it does to you.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't had kids yet, so.
It just makes you fucking more innocent and more apt to the idea that regardless of the fact that you're getting paid money to be your fucking HR representative, that you fucking don't know anything.
Yeah.
So shut the fuck up. Let people live their lives. Figure it out as you go along. But look, man, this whole fucking pandemic, you know, sort of like absolutism is just fucking utter nonsense.
Oh yeah, it's all bullshit. So don't let the panic get to you. Cause come on now, like what really matters is that little kid you're with, or you know, your grandma, the family members who you've seen and lived with for, you know, however old you are. Like those are the people that matter. Everybody else is fucking just going all apeshit crazy. You know, fuck them. Fuck them. Live your own life. And that's the highlight of this, of this episode. Live your life.
All right. All right, guys. Hey, ask questions. Keep it real. And, you know, anytime you think about absolutism, remember, Scientology exists. And they believe the same thing. All right. See you guys next week. Like, subscribe. It's been awesome. And looking forward to being corona-free, guys. All right. Stay safe.
Take it easy. Peace.